All right, I have on the line with us today Arthur von Wiesenberger of BottledWaterWeb.com. Arthur, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I understand you're one of the world's foremost authorities on bottled water, having been studying the subject for many, many years. And as a matter of fact, you did a book in 1991, I believe, on bottled water back in the early days of American bottled water.
Yeah, it's been a kind of an interesting industry, but actually I started first studying it and writing about it back in the 70s when it was still just a drop in the bucket, as it were. It was a $200 million business back then. Today it's about almost $12 billion in the United States.
Wow. So really you've kind of grown with the industry, and you, besides doing the book in 91, and what's the name of that book?
The one in 91 was called The Pocket Guide to Bottled Water.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you, in 1995, very early in the web game, you launched BottledWaterWeb.com. And apparently that's one of the top bottled water sites at this point. I noticed it's number two on Google for the keyword bottled water.
We're very lucky because it was on early, and it's also got a lot of material because, as you know, if you write a lot of stuff about a subject, after it's been published in either a magazine or a newspaper or even in a book form, it eventually goes out of print, and this was a perfect place to kind of put them all. Because people used to ask me for copies of things. I thought, well, here, the Internet sounds like a good place for people to get them because they can just go online and read the story, and they can print it out themselves and save me the postage. So that's how it started in 95, and now it's grown to where it is sort of the industry portal. It has all the bottlers listed and all the suppliers that make everything from the caps to the labels. And then it has a forum so people can chat about water. And believe it or not, there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
And then we also have news.
Mm-hmm. So it's really an industry portal, and that's what I thought. It's really for the industry more than for the layman, but you really have a lot of material in there for people who are just interested in bottled water and all the myths about bottled water and all of the, you know, the connoisseur aspect to it.
Yeah, we have everything from how to taste water, because believe it or not, that people sit down and taste water just like they do wine. And there are differences, so I've put in information on how you can hold your own water tasting and what the parameters are for judging water. Also, we've got a lot of people actually who are consumers are interested to know what's in their water. They want to know where it comes from, how it's processed, if it's a natural spring water or if it comes from an artificial processed system. People want to know if they're getting their bang for their buck, as it were.
Well, I'd like to ask you some questions about some of the myths about bottled water, if they are indeed myths, that I've heard. For instance, I'm told, do not refill bottled water containers because something about the plastic or something. Is that totally from left field?
Well, I think that the idea of not to refill bottles with other water is that unless that water has got some way to, has got something in to inhibit bacterial growth, a water bottle that sits around that's been refilled with other water is an environment where bacteria and algae and other stuff can grow, especially if you leave it in warm places in the sun or in a car seat or something like that. So it's really important to I think just get water from a bottler. It's sealed. They usually put a little ozone gas in the water to inhibit any kind of bacterial growth, and you're sure that there's no infiltration of contaminants.
Okay. Well, I'm somebody who drinks a lot of bottled water, and I tend toward not really very uptown water, See, do you think that the plastic thing that people have raised, as far as plastic leaching chemicals into the water or anything like that, is there any basis for that?
Haven't seen anything to prove that there is a leaching issue with plastic. The high quality plastic, the PET plastic, which you see most water bottles produced in, is very hard and very impervious to any kind of disintegration or leaching. There used to be a plastic that was used, it's still used in the milk industry, called HDPE. It's a kind of translucent plastic, not clear, that you usually see the 1 gallon milk containers in some grocery stores. Bottlers were using that for a while in the water business, and there was a migration of flavor and odor from those plastic bottles. But by and large, the bottled water industry has moved away from that kind of container.
Okay. This may be a bit of a loaded question, but tell me about some of the bottled waters that you think are particularly good. What do you like to drink?
Well, I have a water cellar, and in that cellar, I've got a lot of different brands. I've been collecting them over the years since about the mid-70s. So I have my special bottles, those unique ones that come from unusual places. I mean, in the United States alone, there are over 900 brands of bottled water. Worldwide, there are thousands and thousands. And some of them are from very small communities, little towns where, for example, in Italy alone, there's over 200 different bottlers. And they usually just supply water for a little village. Some of those are in the collection, but if I was going to just on an average day, what I like to drink, I think it depends where I am. Here on the West Coast, we have some good brands. We get Fiji, which I like a lot. That's a really great tasting water. Volvic from France, I drink regularly. Another French water, which is really, I think, great with food, called Badoit, B-A-D-O-I-T. It's from the Loire Valley. And Louis Pasteur used to prescribe it to his patients. But it is a naturally carbonated water, but very, very light carbonation. And that tastes really good. Mm-hmm. Out on the East Coast where you are, Poland Spring has always been a great water. I've been a fan of Poland over the years. Mountain Valley from Hot Springs, Arkansas. That's mm-hmm. actually a nationwide brand, but it comes out of the source in Hot Springs. Mm-hmm. And if I'm overseas in the UK, you know, there's some great local waters. And I love Italian waters. Pana is wonderful. San Pellegrino, another great water, mm-hmm. both from Italy. Mm-hmm. So the list is long. I think there are different good waters for different times of the day and night.
It's interesting. When people really first started talking about bottled water in the United States, you'd hear about Perrier more than anything else. What's really happened with Perrier? You don't see that too much anymore. Is it just that there's more of a glut in the market now in terms of other brands?
Yeah, to a certain degree, there is a water glut. Mm-hmm. But Perrier came on the scene very early in the 70s, in the mid 1970s, and at the time, I mean, Perrier has been around for much longer than that. But in the U.S., it got a very high visibility when they hired a marketing genius from. He'd introduced Levi's to Asia. His name was Bruce Nevins, and his partner Jim Stevens started marketing Perrier, and they marketed it differently than they do in France. In France, it was just known as a natural kind of carbonated mixer. You'd have a Perrier with whiskey, for example. But in the States, it became a standalone beverage where you drink Perrier by itself or maybe with a twist of lemon or lime back in the 70s. And they talked about the miracle of natural carbonation that was in this water. And I don't know if you remember, there were advertisements featuring Orson Welles talking about the miracle of Perrier. Well, that created a lot of allure. You know, people go, wow, what is this thing from France? France already was there was a bit of mystique about France. Mm-hmm. On top of that, in those days, and it was the go-go days of the Studio 54 crowd, and people were going down to Studio 54, and there were pictures of actually this guy, Bruce Nevins, dancing with Margaret Trudeau, drinking Perrier. And I think everyone sort of said, well, if it's good enough for the Studio 54 crowd, we better try it. And it became the beverage of choice. It was a good alternative to alcohol because there was already an awareness that drinking and driving was not such a great thing. So this was a good way to still have a festive drink without being impaired at all. And so it boomed. And Perrier became the leader. It actually became the brand, the name you would use for water. I'll have a Perrier. When you went into a restaurant, and whether it was Perrier or some other brand, everybody knew what you meant. And that was great up until about 1990. In 1990, there was a worldwide recall that resulted because of a PR disaster, really, more than anything else. they found a little traces of benzene in some samples of Perrier. And the folks at Perrier didn't know why it was there. It wasn't supposed to be there. They couldn't identify it correctly, and they ended up coming up with all kinds of excuses that weren't accurate. And as you know, the media gets more and more insistent when they can't get the straight answer. And people from Perrier were making statements that they shouldn't have, and this story became, it went from a back page, page 15 story, to a front page story. And ultimately, they found out what the cause of the benzene was. It wasn't in the water, you know, as they thought it might have been. It wasn't in the glass. It wasn't even in the packaging plant, you know, maybe from a solvent having, somebody, people said there was solvents that they were using cleaning the bottling equipment. It actually came from the natural gas, the CO2 gas that they used, because they would collect gas from a natural CO2 gas well, but they had a filter that would filter out other natural gases. And that filter hadn't been replaced.
Oh,
so as a result, they were getting little tiny traces. I mean, we're talking parts per billion of benzene in the water. And to put it in perspective, a liter of Perrier had about 1/25th the amount of benzene that a slice of a tomato has. So, I mean, it was not a health issue. It was nothing, but it was just a PR disaster.
Right.
And ultimately, they had, since Perrier stood for purity, they had to recall all their water worldwide. And that cost them about $90 million at the time. But worse than that, it sort of disappeared Perrier off the shelves for about 3 or 4 months. And during that time, all their competition got on board, including their biggest rival, which was Avion. And Avion began to market their spring water as a alternative to the whole carbonated Perrier concept, and it worked. People started going, gee, I actually like bottled water without the bubbles. Some people did, and therefore, Perrier is still around, and it's still a great brand. It's personally one of my favorites. It's a very good mixer. You can, you know, Perrier with a little bit of cranberry juice, or Perrier by itself, or I sometimes actually will put a splash of Angostura in it and bitters in it. It's really a tasty beverage.
But it is naturally carbonated, even though it's added.
They use natural CO2 from a well that's nearby, but there are springs where actually the CO2 and the water are together. They come up together, and that one from France, Badois, is a great example. It's rare in nature to find naturally carbonated springs, but that's one of them.
I think Manitou Springs, Colorado, has naturally carbonated springs.
You're right. And that's a very unique area. The sources around Manitou, they were really revered back in the 1800s, and people would journey to Manitou and stay there for the whole summer and take the waters. They'd go to the different springs and drink the naturally carbonated waters, and they felt invigorated and healthy. And I think maybe it was a combination also being in that good Colorado air. And then they'd go back and deal with the normal day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. And the Native Americans, I understand, they had a standing truce for the sacred area of Garden of the Gods in Manitou, which is what they called the Great Mountain.
Well, yeah, and they would, around the springs, they believed there was the Great Spirit Manitou living inside the spring, and it was, as he exhaled, those were what was causing the bubbles to be coming up. And so they would put their treasures, they made offerings to this god of Manitou, putting wampum and other things, beads and so forth, in the springs. And then at night, the French fur traders would come along to the springs, and they'd take out all the stuff the Indians had put in there, and they'd sell them. But, you know, it still is a miraculous place. Great water. I had a spring there for a while, and I donated it to the Manitou Springs Foundation because I want to make sure that these kind of things are protected.
Now, is that the one with the statue of the Indian in front of it?
No, this one was up on Ruxton Avenue. Okay. It was known as Twin Springs, and actually there were two little springs that came out, and it was a popular stopping place for people walking up towards the Pike Peak's Cog Railway.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little drink on the way. And actually, if you put a little lemonade, a little lemon juice and sugar with that, it was a great sparkling lemonade.
Now, I suppose that all bottled water, to some extent or another, is mineral water. But that's a whole other niche, isn't it, mineral water? And do they bottle mineral water much?
They do, but More in Europe, Artie, than in the U.S. Mineral water, it's almost a different psychology between the U.S. and Europe, because in the U.S. we drink water for what's not in it. We know we don't want to have sodium and obviously calories. We don't want to have some people don't want to have fluoride in their water. They don't want to have chlorine in their water. But we're a little hazy on what we do want, whereas the Europeans, they drink water for what's in the water, because they want to have magnesium, potassium, calcium, all kinds of different minerals, silica, and so forth. So there's a much different culture. They were drinking waters in Europe because of the health properties. They would go to certain springs and take the waters, take the cure, as it was, whether it was Baden-Baden in Germany, or they might go to Bath in England and sit in the water, or they may
All right.
go to Vittel in France and drink the water. But all these waters had different actions on your physical system. Some of them were purgative, some of them were diuretic, some of them would help cure kidney stones naturally. Vittel, for example, in France was known since the 1800s as a great place to go and get rid of kidney stones. Europe does have mineral waters. I mean, so does in the United States, but in Europe, it's really they like them, and they're much more minerally. You can find waters that are very high in the mineral content.
Okay.
And the higher the minerals go, the more taste you get.
Before the show, I think you mentioned that not only is bottled water the fastest growing segment of the beverage industry, but I think you mentioned something else that has it reached the empyrean of the whole industry, or is it headed for that, or where are we in the bottled water industry at this point?
Well, it's definitely done in this past year, which has been a tough year for the beverage industry in general, as it has been for other things like stocks. But bottled water has grown still, even as soft drinks have dipped in sales, beer has gone flat, but bottled water grew at about. We think it's going to be around 6, maybe a little over 6%, which is still down from its historic growth. I mean, bottled water usually has been growing in double-digit figures, but still, it's become a way of life in the U.S. And people have reached for bottled water as an alternative to other beverages because of its healthful properties and its convenience and its availability. In 2007, the total U.S. bottled water volume got to about 8.8 billion gallons, which was about a 6.1% advance over 2006. So, it's been good. It's been an amazing business for the people that are doing the right thing. There are different segments within the bottled water business. And that's where you see some interesting evolution taking place.
Okay. I come from Colorado, where for the most part we have very good water, tap water, if you've ever heard of such a thing. But there are a lot of people that drink nothing but bottled water, and even though they have very safe tap water, very fresh, very tasty. Tap water. They just prefer bottled water. And do you drink bottled water, just as a matter of course, or do you ever have tap water?
Well, I mean, I can see why if I was in Colorado, I'd be drinking more tap water because, when you're up in the mountains and you've got this pristine spring that's delivering water right to your faucet, doesn't need a lot of treatment, doesn't need a lot of chemicals. I mean, that's great. That's the way water should be. The big problem is for those of us who live in cities, those mountain springs are far, far away, and they have to be, you have to haul it to you. And my experience with water was I got sick from bad water. I actually had typhoid from contaminated water back in Italy in the 60s. And if you ever got really sick from something, you always remember it. And something as kind of benign looking as water, you don't think of it as having that having the ability to cause that kind of illness. But as you know, typhoid was really rampant in around the world up until they discovered chlorine. But in some communities, it still is a problem. They don't have enough chlorine back. To battle the various E. coli contaminants in water. But anyway, so with the bottled water, the reason why I drink it is I like the taste. I know it's safe. No one ever gets sick or dies from drinking bottled water. And it's consistent, because if you buy, say, for example, you buy a bottle of Poland Spring in New York, or you buy it in Florida, or you buy it in Georgia, wherever they sell it, it's going to be the same water. And it's monitored as a food, whereas tap water is monitored as a utility. Different agencies look over between bottled water and tap water. So they're really, although there is probably perfectly good tap water, there's no guarantees. And unfortunately, as we saw in Milwaukee back in the 90s, when 100,000 people got very sick and many died because of cryptosporidium in their tap water, you never know when it's going to hit. There's no recall program in place because you've already drunk it when they discovered there's a problem.
Sure. We had an E. coli scare in Colorado in the San Luis Valley just within the last year. I think just a few months ago, actually, they had to flush the system. I think about 200 people got sick. And so they were all drinking bottled water for a while. You know, but, that's really interesting stuff. And it's, you know, you wonder about these things, and you spend a lot of time studying these things, and you actually do a lot of speaking, don't you, at various conferences and so forth, and have done expert witness testimony on bottled water and so forth.
Yeah, that's one of the things when you sort of, you don't realize, of course, the reach of the World Wide Web, but when I launched bottledwaterweb.com on the web, it reached out to communities not just here in the U.S., but far fields. And I find I'm doing water tastings in far-off lands. I've done them in Europe and Italy, and just got a request to go to Portugal to do one and to talk about water and explain what's in this seemingly prosaic liquid. And I think people are becoming more aware that water is really a very important resource, and one that we may take for granted, but as Benjamin Franklin said, we only know the worth of water when the well is dry. Mm-hmm. And the wells are getting drier as the days go along, you know?
That's true. I heard that there's one freshwater lake in Siberia that has some outrageous percentage of all the fresh water on Earth. It's one of these really deep deep lakes, kind of like Lake Tahoe. But much, 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 much bigger. Are you familiar with that?
No, but it would be certainly a great resource if the water is drinkable. Some enterprising Russian might get an idea to start bottling it.
You bet. Well, you studied communications in school, and you're actually a co-publisher, is that correct, of the Santa Barbara paper?
Right, yeah, I'm the co-publisher of the Santa Barbara News Press. It started as a way to help the owner make some changes within her company, and then it became, as you know, most things like that started to become a full-time job. So I'm doing that between water. In fact, we drink a lot of water at the paper. But, you know, communications was such a, when I studied in school, it was such a fascinating industry because there's so many different forms of it, whether it's in the print media or radio like this, which I love radio, or in television or in films. It was a great passion to study it. And they all kind of interconnect one way or another.
So was filmmaking part of your communications, curriculum?
Yeah, it was. I went to Brooks Institute out here in Santa Barbara, and that was what I studied, was motion picture production. After that, I went down to L.A., worked at NBC on a couple of shows called Hollywood Outtakes, actually, starring Marilyn Beck. And then I kept wanting to come back to Santa Barbara, and someone had asked me if I'd write them an article about what was in my refrigerator, because they thought it was very curious. I had a bunch of bottles of water in my fridge, and I said, sure, I'll write you an article about it. And I went and studied the subject a little bit at the university in the library and found out there's nothing written about water. So I wrote to the bottlers. I said, tell me why you guys bottle this water. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of information, because these businesses go back hundreds of years, and springs go back to the dawn of man, most of them. So the article evolved into a book, and the book evolved into four more books and into a career as a consultant to the industry.
Wow. And you live and work in Santa Barbara now, eh?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to get me out of here. It's pretty much paradise. Other than an occasional trip to Colorado, I could see doing that, especially during ski season.
Well, it's such a beautiful area, and you have such interesting neighbors there. Do you guys ever do anything fun and exciting in the winter?
Well, you know, in California, I mean, winter time is one of our nicest times of the year because it's still sunny and it's pretty warm. You wouldn't want to necessarily go swimming in the ocean, but you could do it in the pool. And of course, you know, a lot of the people flock here during the winter time because it's colder elsewhere, and they come out here to kind of thaw out. And we, of course, have lots of interesting characters who live in Santa Barbara. It's kind of a mecca for the movie industry folks and entertainment industry people. And so you might sit in a restaurant and you'll see Oprah Winfrey sitting at another table, and Rob Lowe at another table, and something got like Hollywood North.
Yeah, good restaurant, I'll bet.
This particular one I'm thinking of, yeah, it's one of the most popular. It's hard to pay attention to your food, though, because you kind of rubberneck to see who else is there.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks for spending time with us today, Arthur, and we really enjoyed speaking with you, and thanks for sharing all of your special insights into bottled water. I think I learned a lot today.
Artie, I appreciate the interview. It's really a pleasure talking to you, and maybe we'll run across one another and open a bottle of water together.
All right, that sounds great. I can't wait.